Hey, welcome back to Tip TV Finance. We're joined by my co-host, Mike Ingram, strategist at BGC Partners, and somebody making his international debut on Tip TV, Pranay Hariharan, who's a management consultant. How are you today, Pranay?
I'm good, thank you.
Right, your chosen subject today is nothing controversial, nothing difficult, and something which is just, you know, we can rattle off in a couple of minutes. Mid-East energy business and its impact on geopolitics. I think it's called a minefield, isn't it?
What can I say?
Right. So where should we begin? I mean, I was just saying offline that the Saudis had their strategy apparently to force other producers out of the market, the shale oil, the swing producers in the
yeah,
US.
So what we've been observing over the last year or, you know, a little beyond a year is basically a fight for market share driven by OPEC. Up until most recently, where we've seen disagreement and a non-cohesive OPEC, basically they were driving the markets. Now what's happened is it's primarily a Saudi-driven OPEC. As you mentioned, the idea of pumping till eternity, it hasn't worked so far, but what has worked for them is to ensure that they've still retained their market share, and that's been, you know, so on that front alone, they have succeeded.
So what's the point having a market share if you're bust?
Well,
I mean, I think the Saudis need $18 plus to maintain their lifestyle. Is that right?
That's true. I mean, Oil, even at about $10, Aramco as a company is profitable.
Right.
Now the question is whether the country overall is profitable. No one really knows the internal numbers. I mean, Aramco is the world's largest company, but it's also the world's most secretive company. And if you look at the way OPEC has moved, you know, all this time, including now. Whether there are members who do not agree, but still everyone goes with the flow, because at the end of the day, the Saudis dictate terms at the OPEC. Now, we have seen most recently with the new deputy crown prince ruffling feathers, we've seen a change in an oil minister. There's also a talk about part of Aramco going public. Now, yes, so all of that segues back to your point that has it worked? On the other hand, it's positive. If a company like Aramco is going public, then there's that much more transparency from a Saudi.
Well, presumably they want to maintain their secrecy and take the money from going public.
Well, I don't know to what extent that's going to be possible. But yeah, they're
that's going to be interesting.
It'll all be on page 403 of the prospectus in print, like that big. Maybe the risk statement.
Well, again, my take on Aramco going public would be more of the foreign assets. I believe that they're probably going to encapsulate their foreign assets into an entity, and probably take that particular entity public.
That transparent, clean operation.
Exactly. I don't think, energy being completely sovereign and having no private players in Saudi, I don't think they're going to take the production, anything related to the downstream part public. But again, you never know.
Just have to question the sort of the idea of a Saudi-controlled OPEC, because to me it seems that the OPEC policy is really a no policy. We can't agree on pretty much anything, and obviously we saw that awful meeting in Vienna in December, which basically confirmed it, no quotas whatsoever. For me, just looking at the production numbers, it suggests to me that far from the narrative of Saudi going bonkers and pumping as much as they possibly can and basically ruining the party, it's actually Saudi alone within OPEC that's actually exercising any kind of restraint whatsoever. And it makes me wonder, in an environment where you're getting Iraq returning to the market, Iran, massive geopolitical rival, certainly in the Middle East region, coming back to the market, massive aspirations to expand production. This is as much about Saudi attempting to reassert its control over OPEC as Saudi already in the driving seat, and to some extent, the US shale is just a nice byproduct of that, because you've had years and years and years of Saudi being the swing producer within OPEC and OPEC's market share shrinking. So you know you've got a situation where if Saudi were to replicate that now, they wouldn't be just pumping at 80-85% capacity. They'd be pumping at less than 50% capacity, and they can't afford to do that. They need a more robust revenue stream, shall we say, to pay the bills.
Well, I think what we're missing out here is the Russian element.
Ah, right. Well, they cheat all the time, so you can't get anything from them, yeah?
Well, I mean, this is the energy business, so if you're talking about cheating, then that's another ball game altogether. But at the end of the day, Russia today is probably the world's largest producer of energy and has huge reserves. So a market loss or a drop in market share for OPEC technically means a gain in market share for Russia. And that's, it's, yes, US shale does come into play, and all of that is true, but this is also a direct kind of confrontation with Russia. Because both entities, now I'm going to take Russian oil and OPEC oil, and let's now take OPEC as OPEC and not, you know, just look at Saudi Arabia. But if you look at OPEC and if you look at Russia, they're primarily catering to similar markets, you know, the same. Yeah. So they're fighting for market share within Europe, within Southeast Asia, so on and so forth. So we've already seen the Russians also discounting Ural crude. Not to lose market share, and they followed suit, right? Russia is also pumping at an all-time high. They're ready to, you know, take the fight to anybody who brings it to them on all fronts, right? Mm-hmm. So, and they are an energy-driven economy. What's worked in favor for Russia is the devaluation of their ruble. So on a national budget standpoint, they have been tipping over, but it's not as it's from a balance standpoint, it's not as bad as it is in the Middle East, because the commitment towards infrastructure building in the Middle East is far higher than that within Russia. So we're seeing lately a lot of investments being cut back within Middle East, infrastructure investments. Qatar, for instance, is not doing too well. Neither is Saudi, for that matter. UAE has managed to stay afloat partially because of the fact that they are on many fronts the most diversified economy. Are they diversified to the extent that they should be? That's another question. But are they diversified enough to at least balance some kind of shock? Yes, because Dubai is a trade hub. They've got tourism, and not to mention on a social level, they're far more liberal. So businesses do look at UAE as a possible hub, you know, outside of the energy space. That's not the case at this point in time with Saudi, though we have seen Saudi Arabia also looking to open up its real estate market and have foreign investment on that front as well. How many people would be open to doing that from an international perspective? That's left to be seen. But surely I would see a lot of takers within the Middle East who would want to invest on that front as well. They're also looking to diversify on their manufacturing front. So on that level alone, there's a lot more investment needed for Saudi Arabia as opposed to, you know, the other players.
Right, well, I'll be getting my checkbook out, but in the meantime, Pranay Hariharan, management consultant, thank you very much for making your debut on Tip TV.
My pleasure.
Okay. We'll be back after the break.